Welcome, podcast listeners, to the inaugural podcast called Chatting 3D Print. My name is Kevin Carr. I'm the president of Master Graphics, one of the co-hosts. Supporting us today is Lynn Milbreth, who we do not let talk that often on the backside technical side. So you want to say hi, Lynn?
Hello.
And of course, I can't do it alone, so I have a co-host, Mark Blumreiter. Mark, want to introduce yourself?
Yep, thanks, Kevin. I'm Mark Blumreiter, applications engineer with Master Graphics, and I will be co-hosting this podcast with my boss, Kevin Carr. The purpose of this podcast is to discuss the latest trends and technologies in additive manufacturing. We plan on interviewing guests and bringing their insights and real-world experiences on how they've implemented 3D printing or additive manufacturing into their production environments. We'll talk to people using the technology from concept to production, and even those who are manufacturing and supplying the printers. Our overall intent is to be informative and educational, help bring some of the hype in additive manufacturing down to reality, and plus have some fun along the way. And what's unique about this podcast, as opposed to a handful of other 3D print podcasts that are out there, is that we want to focus on the professional and industrial side of additive manufacturing, not necessarily the consumer, lower-priced hobbyist machines. So we'll be talking about companies like HP and Carbon, who are doing great work in the production additive space, as well as some of the traditional large 3D print companies like 3D Systems and Stratasys.
Great. Yeah, so our format's going to be pretty straightforward. Mark and I are going to take the first maybe 5 or 10 minutes, just kind of talk about anything that's of note. If there's new technologies in the 3D print or additive manufacturing space, something of interest. And then we'll actually interview some of our guests. And again, you know, 3D print, we're very fortunate because we run into some very smart, intelligent, brilliant people, some eclectic people. So we hope to bring on some entertaining, you know, people that can really provide some insight of, you know, what is being effectively done in the 3D print or additive manufacturing space. I mentioned early, you know, this is powered by Master Graphics. It's who we both work for. But again, you can look us up at mastergraphics.com. But our intent really is to be informative. And we've seen this shift to more production and true additive manufacturing. We thought it'd be good to share some of our experiences. So we'll do the episodes on a monthly basis, and hopefully you'll find it entertaining. Now, the next thing I think we need to do is kind of explain our background, right? Like, why do we think we can talk 3D print? So as I mentioned, I'm Kevin Carm, president of Master Graphics. Master Graphics is a Midwest-based company. We go everywhere from, you know, Wisconsin, Minnesota, down to Missouri. And our focus really has been as a reseller of 3D print technology. And so we're not a service bureau, but we are, our strength is placing 3D print equipment at our clients' locations, kind of changing the processes around so that you can leverage it. And then, of course, the ongoing support. So we've been into 3D print, and me personally, for the last 12 years. We started with Z-Corp, which was kind of this powdered color technology that really is a phenomenal technology and still around today. But it was more conceptual. So we did that about 5 years. Then 3D Systems bought Z-Corp, and we became resellers of the full 3D Systems line. Everything from SLA to SLS to metal printing. And we did that for probably another 5 years. And then we were fortunate about 3.5 years ago when HP introduced their kind of revolutionary technology. We joined on as an HP reseller, and that's been our focus. So as I mentioned, our podcast is, you know, is focused on that production side. And as a company, that's how we've evolved, and that's how Mark and I's experience has evolved, is we really have this focus on true additive manufacturing. And so, you know, it's interesting, about 7 years ago, I saw that. So that's been my role, is kind of driving the management and vision of Master Graphics and bringing on the right technologies and just putting the right support team around. So my expertise or knowledge of 3D print is probably at a higher level, but I've had access to a lot of good information on different technologies. I have a good network in place, and that's why we wanted to do that, is to kind of share that. Whereas Mark is much more intelligent and technical than me. So I'll turn that over to Mark, so Mark can explain why he thinks he's, you know, effective to be a co-host with me on this 3D print podcast.
That's right. As Kevin mentioned, I will bring the intelligence to this podcast. My background is in mechanical engineering. I spent a number of years working for a small manufacturer in Wisconsin where we implemented additive on the shop floor for everything from prototypes to tools and fixtures and jigs. And so I really got to see how the engineers, how the shop guys on the floor were using this technology, how it was saving them time, how it was saving the company money. And now in my role at Master Graphics, I see it from the sales side and helping numerous different companies implement the technology. And just seeing where this so many different uses for this technology just keeps being developed in new materials and new processes. And so I think because of that background, I have a unique perspective I can bring to the podcast from as Kevin mentioned, a technical standpoint. And a few things just to mention on the show, if you'd like to be on the show, if you have someone that you'd recommend to be on the show, feel free to reach out to us. We're always looking to meet new interesting people who would bring some insights onto the show. And then also keep in mind, Kevin and I are an engineer and a manager. We likely won't be as polished as some of the other podcasts you listen to, but that's okay. These are just raw conversations, business conversations we're having. And this is for engineers, managers, anyone who's involved in the industry, who wants to be involved in the industry or learn more about it.
No, that's great, Mark. And like I said, we really do want it to be informative. Again, I do these things because the 3D print additive manufacturing space is small. So we really want to be informative. Hey, before I get to our first guest, Lynn Milbirth, I never let you talk. So you got to give 10-second overview on who you are.
I've been with Master Graphics for 25 years. I actually saw Stratasys was our first 3D print way back 21 years ago. So we actually were a Stratasys dealer at one time back in the day when it was like this orange, yellowy material that they used, and our application engineers would produce some parts for people. And I think we sold our first one down in Kenosha back in the day. So I do remember 3D print way back then.
That was before you had a visionary to take that 3D print and build a company off of that, right?
No, well, Mr. Skolaski, he was pretty visionary and bring it back then and 21 years ago. But yes, you are, to bring it back, you are wonderful.
Yes, well, I didn't ask for that kudos, but Skolaski was great. So anyways, so with that, we have our first guest lined up. The first guest we're going to bring on is Kevin Marchant. He works for D3 Technologies, and actually we do some work with D3 Technologies. They're one of the largest Autodesk resellers. They were a 3D systems reseller, and actually we just acquired that piece of the business from them. But Kevin's got a lot of experience, again, more technical like Mark. So we're going to bring Kevin on and kind of talk about his experiences. So with that, we'll bring Kevin on to do the interview. Join us today is Kevin Marchant from D3/Master Graphics. So we want to welcome Kevin. We have Mark and Lynn Milbirth with us as well. So let's start. Kevin, if you want to give the listeners a little background on kind of your business history and your experience with 3D print.
So business-wise, I've been doing drafting and design for going on 25 plus years. That led me into a CAD management role type desires, which led me to working with D3, supporting software. And then that ventured into project management, which then ventured into 3D printer support. So about the past 6 years, I focused strictly on 3D printing, not teaching and support as much. So I started supporting the 3D systems printer lines with the multi-jet technology, 3510s, 5500s, then 2500s, figure fours, as well as the CJPs, the 60 series that started out back in the day with Z printers. So then from there, gained a little bit of knowledge of the 3DP platform, which is large format open source FDM. Into that grew in a relationship with Ultimaker, smaller, more consumer oriented FDM. And then Partnered for a while with Markforged with the composite printing, FDM, reinforceable, super strong, accurate parts. And then now becoming fully certified on the HP line of printers with the 580s, 500 series, the 4200 and the 5200 series. So all in all, coming up on my 7th year of 3D printing support and installation and kind of overall management.
Is there anything you haven't worked on after that list?
I don't like SolidWorks much.
Oh yeah, that's good. So hey, in that time, I always like to ask this question, like in the 7 years, what from a technology evolvement, anything over the last 7 years that you know, whether it be a big leap forward technology wise, or, you know, what of the printers you've worked on have, you know, been the most interesting or biggest advancements?
The most interesting slash advancement, you know, to me is still the 5500, 5600 series from 3D Systems, because that's the system I've been able to work on, but it has the ability to mix both rigid and flexible material, which is phenomenal. From a prototyping standpoint, the avenues that allows a company to go down and explore, whether it's overmolding or simply being able to create a durometer of material that isn't necessarily a fully rigid material or a fully flexible, but something that's somewhere in between, they can emulate many more materials out there.
Hey Kevin, I have a question on that. You, with the 5500, I know that sounds really similar to the type of systems that Stratasys has out with the J750, and they're all jetting technology. You would certainly know better than I did. What are the differences between the jetting that what 3D Systems did and then what Stratasys did, and who came first? I'm curious, because it seems like they're very, very similar. Did one copy the other? And
They're similar but different. I am not a huge Stratasys expert, but I've got several customers. We've got several customers out there that have multiple machines. And one of the customers I've got a great relationship with has a really nice big Stratasys machine, and it's beautiful. It creates very vivid colors and great material properties in there. The advantage that I have always seen with the 3D Systems technology is the way that they jet material. They go through, not to make this real technical, but their ability to control the droplet form and that phase change that happens between the print head ejection and the material placement creates such a better finite control of geometry. I personally have always found it amazing that the prints that I can get out of a 3D Systems machine multi-jet printer and the accuracy that they produce is so impressive, whether it's a small screen or small threads. And those are things that I know that I've seen my customers use our older machines, our older 3510 machine, to print that kind of hardware on, because they cannot print that kind of hardware with a Stratasys machine. It just cannot create that fine detail. And a huge part of that is with the multi-jet technology and the paraffin wax support, it's a very passive support removal system. Whereas with Stratasys, even with dissolvable material, you still have to go in and physically remove material from those prints, similar to the HP systems, that disallow some of that fine detail that in some instances is required.
It was a good question, Mark. So, and Mark, you got to clarify Kevin Carr or Kevin Marchand when you ask that question. Yeah. I'm just kidding.
And Kevin Marchand, feel free to get as technical as you want. It'll be above Kevin Carr's head, but that's okay.
That is true. It is above my head. Hey, you know, one of the other ones, because again, we're not as familiar with that, like the multi-durometer material jetting technologies, right? Because we haven't really been involved with it recently. You know, initially, Have there been improvements in the materials that are actually jetted versus what I saw 7-8 years ago when it was first developed, right? Like, are you, you know, when you're trying to make a really elastomeric material, has that improved over the last 7-8 years?
Yes. They went through a stage when they first brought out their black elastomeric, which turned out to be extremely gummy, very sticky. I'm not sure what the technical term for that is. But to kind of put it in perspective, when I was on site for training with 3D Systems, they had a 3510 machine that was running elastomeric material, and it was brand new at the time. They figured out they had to run that machine 24/7, that if it sat for longer than 2 hours, they were replacing printheads because it just gummed up the system so much. Now, when they came out with the 5500 series, which the newer iteration is the 5600, but when they came out with that machine and the ability to mix the two, they had changed that formulation to where, you know, we had customers that had, would hold two support bottle or two part bottles, and then in the drawer underneath that they hold two more material bottles, and that's when they can mix, and they would have those two elastomeric bottles in there, and they'd run those two same elastomeric bottles in there for 6 months, and they'd print an elastomeric print that was 100% elastomeric about every 6 to 8 weeks in there, and they printed a lot of overmolding, so it was a lot of rigid with the completely 100% elastomeric over the top of it, and I have never replaced a print head for elastomeric gummed now. So you know, they figured out whatever that kitch was, and they fixed it with.
Well, I think that's pretty common. We see this all the time, right? Technology is developed and introduced, and then over time, the real evolution becomes that year or two years later, right? When they really understand the nuances as it's running all the time, right?
Yep.
Is that technical enough for you, Mark? I use the word nuances.
I was going to say, I think we see exactly that with HP, where 4 years ago they released the 4200, which was a great machine in its own right, but then they came out with a 5200, which is probably the machine they wish they could have released originally, but they just needed 3 or 4 years of learning under their belt and customer feedback and
all of that real world use.
Yeah. Well, HP's going to be knocking on Mark's door after that. So, you know, Kevin, in your experience too, kind of, where do you see the big advantages of 3D print or additive manufacturing? Like most of, you know, I mean, you're in there where they're actually using it. I mean, is there a part of the design cycle that you see? Do you see, you know, where do you see most of your customers you're supporting really taking advantage of 3D print that maybe most people aren't?
I think, you know, the real shift in today's world, which today's world involves COVID and all that wraps around that, the real shift from what I see and what I have seen in my past is the prototyping, the form, fit, function. And with the CJP, the color printers, it's the what does it look like, you know, point of view. Whereas now, you know, it's really more kind of bringing HP into the picture. It's really a huge boon to be able to have a piece of equipment out there or a system out there that I can, you know, we can create thousands of components. And that is huge because where, you know, traditionally 3D printing, rapid prototyping, and that line of thought is I've got this idea, and I've personally done this. I've personally had an idea, created a model, printed it out in the morning, you know, test fit it, figured out I needed to change the design, redesigned it, and then reprinted the final product that night. And so I have seen that rapid iteration of a desired component. And then at the same time, I have also, when COVID came into the picture, been part of that kind of resurgence of, hey, we can rapidly produce these parts. Whereas with the equipment I had available, you know, I thought it was impressive that I could put out 1,200 pieces over a 2-week period, Whereas, you know, if I did have access to the, you know, the 4200 or the 5200 with HP, you know, we're looking at, you know, probably could have done 1200 of those parts overnight, you know, and whatnot. And so that ability now to have the components available to take that idea and not only iterate it through the design process to get the end goal of what you want, but then to be able to take that to a small scale market is unfathomable to me 5 years ago. 5 years ago, I would have said that would, you know, not ever. You know, it's too expensive to fill a multi-jet machine solid full of wax support and part material. You know, you're never going to see anybody do that. HP comes in and they say, hey, we've got this great reusable support process that makes, you know, these large capacity prints very economical for us. And now, you know, we can go in and almost gross post-process these parts and literally have a design that I can take to market, theoretically, you know, design it on Monday and start shipping stuff Friday.
Well, it's interesting. And then Mark, I'll let you ask a question because I dominate all these things. But, you know, I said this is, it's, you know, the smaller companies now have a unique advantage that they didn't have to the larger companies. Meaning back in the day, if you're developing even a cell phone case or a phone from Motorola, the big companies had all the resources in the big model shops to create it. And now people can come up with a concept, an idea, and at least from a short run perspective or medium run, come up with an idea and, you know, and produce it, right? So you don't need to be this behemoth company. There's so many ideas of that you can now think of that you can actually get to market sooner and quicker with. So, yeah.
Yeah, I was just going to totally agree with what Kevin Marchant was saying in terms of this, you know, it just the possibilities it opens up. And I've done the same thing. You design something, you print it, you test it, you tweak the CAD model, you reprint it overnight. And or in some cases with HP now, I'll create five versions of that part and throw them all in the printer because you might as well just print them all at once. For example, if it's a part with, you know, printed moving assemblies where I don't know exactly what the clearance should be, I'll design it with five different clearances, and print them all and then just pick whichever one, turned out best. Yeah. But, and we're the larger companies, the benefits we're seeing with, you know, you mentioned that with the jetting technology is form, fit, function, the CJP is for, you know, how's the part going to look. And now, when someone like HP comes around with the materials, the applications are, you know, a company can start to do actual validation testing on their final part because you're printing it sometimes in the exact same material that your production part is going to be, so they can get a jump start on that end use, on whatever validation, whatever testing they need to be. And then, like you said, in some cases, even start to ship parts before, you know, before tooling is done. If tooling is going to take 8 weeks, well, we'll just print it for the, you know, 8 weeks until that tooling gets in. So that's, yeah, I think that's just awesome and interesting to see. But the question I was going to ask, because you've worked on so many different machines with HP now and a handful of different FDM machines and the jetting machines, what is the most, I guess, either unique or interesting application you've seen? Because you've been in a ton of shops and seen a ton of parts that people have made and different creative things that people have done. Are there any applications that stand out to you?
There's some cool ones, definitely. Some of them, I'll be completely honest, that things that just working in the industry of 3D printing, I've been privileged to see that I cannot talk about. And so those are just like the fun, really cool things to see. The other cool things are small startup companies that get into this. We've got a customer, Frosty Tech. They got into it wanting to come up with a better way to have a cold beer. I'm not a beer person, but I like ciders and other cold beverages. They have a different technology for rapidly cooling a can. You know, so when they first got into the business of 3D printing, they were printing these prototypes with the intent and the ability to take a off, you know, out of the box can, put it in their holder, and within something like 6 minutes, you had a 34 degree drink. Pretty impressive.
Well, I'm a bigger person, so I'm excited. And based on Wisconsin alone, Kevin, I think there's a market for them. Frost Pizza. Right. We're going to get them as a sponsor for the show.
Yeah. So now they've moved into other areas as well now. They've got some sport shakers, and they're doing some ozone stuff. So it's cool to see they're still printing parts to assist other areas. But they're one of those shops that have a bunch of really smart people working with them.
Yeah.
In there.
That is a perfect example of, again, someone using 3D print or rapid prototyping or whatever to come up with a concept and be able to compete with whoever.
Yeah.
Anyways, Mark Blumreiter, that's on my Christmas gift. You too, Lynn Miller.
Okay. I don't know. I was going to ask for a beer heater. At some Packer playoff games, I got to prevent my beer from turning to ice.
That is true. Who wants to go to a Packer game? So how about any mistakes or funny things? I like to keep it light. Any funny stories about something printed that didn't work? Or I know this is a harder question or something, you know, make people laugh at home.
Printed that didn't work. About the only
dumbest application you ever heard. Don't use the company name.
Right. Well, about the biggest area where things don't turn out when they're supposed to. Would be in the FDM world, when you end up with a ball of spaghetti instead of whatever. Probably the strangest was a firmware update failure that I personally saw with a printer that I was using, where it would leave strings of reinforcement material, in this case fiberglass, strung outside of the print. And so I had, you know, a customer part that we were printing for validation, and when it got said and done, it probably had 30 little sprouts of growth out. And when you walk down in the first thing in the morning and you look at this thing, your mind doesn't quite make sure. And I was like, what got into my printer and, you know, made a nest? Because it wasn't a traditional failure, because it wasn't the FDM base material that made a spaghetti mess. It was the secondary material that made a mess. And that was the strangest failure, but not failure.
Yeah. FDM mistakes are always a little more exciting than something like HP, where HP, there's just an error code on the screen. There's nothing interesting about that.
Well, and I laugh, Kevin Marchand, we've talked about this many times ago before, is like, you know, post-processing is probably the biggest secret that no one talks about in the 3D print world. But you know what? Firmware might be a close second, because anyone who's dealt with any computer system or control, even on our 2D side, firmware screws up everything. Sometimes it makes it better, but sometimes it screws it up.
Talking about post-processing, early days of the 2500, which is 3D systems, we've got a 2500 plus in my office. Barb, my sales lady, executive, whatever you want to call her, sends me a model for a customer to demo, and it was literally a meat processing center, complete with saw blades and saws and tables and the whole nine yards. And I'm like, sure, we'll just shrink it down and print it. And it looked great until I post-processed it with MultiJet's 3D systems. We use heat to remove the paraffin wax, and heat also makes the polymer soft, the part material soft. And so I had a very Salvador Dali looking melted post-processed part. I kept that part for a long time as a awesome history of, you can't just shrink a model and expect it to print right.
We printed architectural models for years. It's the hardest thing we ever did.
Yeah. Oh man. And yet that is an area that I don't understand why more architects don't take advantage of 3D printing.
I'll answer that, and we'll get back to 3D print. It's because visualization is so much better these days. You can immerse yourself
I would agree that the rendering and the visualization, you click a button and it generates it for you. And architects are making last minute changes all the time, that once you print it, you're committed to it looking like that, where Otherwise, you go back into Revit and make a change and click re-render, and there's your image again. But I agree. I've tried to shrink models. What's that?
Said, you know, that on Mark's point, you know, you throw VR into it and you're walking around the model.
Yeah.
And literally you got, you know, somebody that says, hey, what if we did this? And you're like, all right, cool. Give me 2 seconds. Boom. You put a door over there and like, that's what it would look like.
Yeah. It is. Yeah. And like I said, we still see models like Chicago. We cover like some that you go back to Z Corp. We had some of the biggest installs at Architects, but it just was not as common. So, all right, Mark, what were you asking next?
I was going to ask, we touched on COVID briefly, and I know we asked Barb this a couple weeks ago when we interviewed her. How has COVID affected the way that you're interacting with customers or impacted your job? And if you want to add on that, how have you seen it affect our customers as well?
The biggest impact that I had was my inability to go and visit, to see customers just at the very beginning of COVID. So it changed my ability to go in and work on machines. Now it's more, I just have to, you know, today I was at a customer's and I basically wait in the entryway until somebody comes and checks my temperature. And as long as my temperature's okay, then I'm okay. So, you know, and as long as you're in the building, you've had your temperature taken. At a different customer's, not only you get your temperature taken, but then you get to wear a wristband to show that you had your temperature taken and you passed. And as far as, you know, the customer impact, we do have a couple customers that, you know, are actively printing parts for COVID, whether it's for themselves. You know, we printed several nose pieces to a visor setup to augment a hospital that had the bands, but, you know, wanted nose pieces to make them more comfortable. And so they came up with a design and we printed out, I think I ended up, 12 or 1600 of those things. That's kind of what I was talking about there with those.
That's right. You guys, I forgot D3 did this whole fundraiser and I think I got hats. I got to find my hat.
Yeah. And so that was pretty cool to be part of that. Yeah. And then I used the Markforged printer, which is FDM, and printed for a couple nurse friends of mine in the beginning, printed some mask keepers, you know, the ear savers, those kind of guys on that, because it was easier, flexible, kind of the whole nine yards there. But, you know, other than the very beginning and those that are currently, for the most part, most everybody is pretty business as usual. You know, once they kind of got over the initial shock of this is what the world's come to, and have since then figured out, okay, this is our response, you know, kind of whichever, however it is, everybody seems to be kind of calmed down a little bit.
Hey, go ahead, Mark, you got something?
I was just going to say, yeah, and I'm curious long-term how our customers are going to react in terms of how they view additive manufacturing and how they want to integrate it in their business. Certainly this year was slow for us because most people wanted to hold on to their cash, understandably. But, you know, in 2021, 2022, as people are looking back on the pandemic, I'm wondering if they're going to want to try and keep more stuff in-house and not be as reliant on outside suppliers, be able to give their engineers more in-house resources to prototype and do that short volume production. So it could, you know, for in terms of additive, it could end up being a boost to the industry for the next couple of years.
And I really think it will be, just because there was a lot of really positive, you know, coverage of, hey, look at all these people out here that are rapidly printing different types of PPE. You know, whether, you know, it was, you know, there was a big group in Wichita that, you know, circulated, and I think at one time they reported they had 175 home printers being utilized to print. First, they were the face shield covers, and then they switched to the printable stethoscopes. And they would just go from one product to another, whatever the Wichita hospital areas needed. But they had 175 people in there, that network, that were printing parts for it. And so I think all those little stories and, you know, this CNN coverage about how we can print ventilators and those kind of things are going to shed a good positive light. And especially when they started talking about, you know, that some of those machines out there could print 280 ventilators at a time. You know, it's not necessarily only the people that care about that particular issue, but you're going to have that footnote in the back of, you know, managers and CEOs and CFOs and all the people that can make those kind of decisions saying, hey, there is an ability out there to produce this stuff at this level. Uh-huh. And if not those, you know, but we make XYZ part, you know, whatever nozzle or holder or whatever. And now they're aware that ability exists. And that, I think, is huge for our industry.
Well, I hope we don't have a short memory is what I always say when we look at adapting new technologies, right? I mean, we have a tendency, we get back caught in the whirlwind and aren't as innovative, right? So,
yep.
Hey, Kevin, I mean, because you've dealt on the service side of things, right? And making sure printers, once they're installed, they're easy to sell, right? But then once you get them in there, you got to keep them going, right? It becomes a critical one. Any, you know, kind of best practices or feedback to those who maybe were prototyping or going to production that, you know, that you would say as a, you know, a supporter of those installations, like what do they need to know, expectations, best practices, you know, just kind of, you know, what if you're going to make this next step in 3D print, I mean, what's the key thing to make sure that it's running properly?
You know, the age-old saying, cleanliness is the next thing to godliness. Mm-hmm. And cleanliness is huge. You know, no matter if it's FDM, powder-based, multi-jet, that's irrelevant. There's so many different sensors and optics and vacuum tubes and load cells and just all these little things. It reminds me of the movie Fifth Element. You know, all these little things have jobs, and all those little things need to do their job so this big thing can do its job. And so, historically speaking, those that kept their machines the cleanest always seem to have the least amount of issues. And machines that, either because they were used a ton or their external environment wasn't friendly, they always had the most issues. And with 3D systems with a paraffin wax, the byproduct of that we call pixie dust. And it's an alcohol, you know, almost iridescent, flaky stuff that when it gets jetted, that escapes and it starts to collect. And when you have a machine that's used a lot, we call it pixie dust because it just collects over everything. And when you don't clean that out, it can block sensors and it can gum up, you know, the drives that use grease to keep them lubricated and stuff. And so just really the biggest thing is just if you keep it clean, probably going to work well.
It's funny. That's why this is not my strength detail. So when I do some of the parts at the office and that, you're right, I'm not the best operator. But we definitely see it. It's funny that you, because that was going to be one of my points. We see this environment and cleanliness is just such a big one. And having a key operator that they really care about the printer. You not only does it make it operate better, but again, you know, everyone always talks about the technology being, you know, replaced. Technology hasn't changed a whole lot in 3D print. You've had people like Carbon and HP. But, you know, if we're installing a printer, you're probably going to get 10 or 15 years out of the life of that. And those who've kept it clean, you know, they'll keep it forever, right?
Yep.
So I think that was a great, that's a really good one. And it's sometimes that's hard to explain as you're installing this, but yeah, it helps to have a key operator or someone who's in charge that is really on top of it, right?
Yeah, we always try to find that champion, that individual who, you know, they've had experience with the information before, with you know, hardware. They've got a home printer, or they used one in college or high school or whatever, but they just have that innate care of that system. And then if I can identify a champion when I'm installing it, then that guy becomes my best friend at that company, yeah, because he's the one going to be, you know, shoot me an email saying, hey, you know, we noticed, you know, this little line over here, you know, what's going on? And I can go to him and, you know, like, hey, send me some pictures, send me the log files, versus that engineer who is so distant and just says, hey, this print failed.
Right.
It's broken again. Come fix it.
Right. Right.
And so having that champion, that person that cares is priceless.
Yeah.
That is a really good point. And it's usually a red flag for me if I walk into a company and they say, oh, we're just going to, you know, any engineer who wants to run it, they're just going to be the one to run the printer. I'm like, well, like you said, designate that internal champion, that key person. It reminds me, in college, I lived in a house with eight guys, and you would think with eight people, you could keep the kitchen clean, but no one wants to clean someone else's mess. And so it just doesn't get, like, no one takes ownership of keeping it clean. And so I 100% agree, and that is what I tell all our customers, is that keeping a machine clean. I usually say good hygiene with your machine is like the key. Yeah.
All right, Mark, you got another question?
I don't have anything. No.
So, I mean, because we got probably about eight more minutes. But, hey, Kevin Marchand, any question that we didn't ask? Again, think of the people hopefully listening to us, just understanding 3D print. You've got a unique experience. Any question we should have asked that, you know, your experience you think you should share?
You know, I think the biggest question that I normally get when I meet somebody in a different environment and you start that conversation, oh, you know, how's life? You know, what do you do for a living? And I tell them I work on 3D printers. And they're like, oh, you mean, you know, like, you know, a MakerBot or something. It's like, no, I work on the bigger, oh, well, you know, what makes those better? And just the clear understanding of what you want and what you need out of a machine. Whether, you know, in other words, I'm not going to go to an open source FDM printer if I want to be able to say, here's my model, whether it's an STL or step file or whatever file format. And when I say go and I say print, do I want to be able to literally just say that and just say print? Or do I have that mentality that I'm going to want to say, okay, but if I print this, I'm going to feed at X feet per minute and I want this temperature to be this way and this temperature to be that way. And I'm going to sit here and I'm going to watch that so I can tweak those settings. Or am I, you know, more just apt to say play and then walk away and come back 2 days later to a finished print?
Yeah.
You know, what's the mentality? And then what's the end goal? You know, is your end goal, you know, am I only ever going to figure out a better way to wrap and keep this safe for me? Or am I going to figure out a way to wrap that and make it safe for me and, you know, everybody else out in the world that would want one? So do I want a machine that I can do two of those, or do I want a machine that I want to do 500 of those?
Yeah, it's interesting, and I probably say this on every time we're going to do a podcast, but I think, you know, even some of that experience, like you said, some people think they go and buy an inexpensive 3D printer. A lot of times they're the right application, but a lot of times they're not, and then they get turned off of 3D print, and they say it's too difficult, and they implemented the wrong technology.
I think the term 3D printer actually did a disservice to it, because people compare it to their 2D printer at home, where you type up Microsoft Word document and hit print and it's going to work every time. Whereas you bring in a 3D printer, and like you mentioned, Kevin, it's not, there's a lot of knobs to turn and things to tweak and to get it turned out just right.
My last question, Kevin, is in, you know, when people are implementing and you kind of talk about that next phase of doing more, I'd say, end use parts. I mean, what do you see the biggest challenge to doing that, making that kind of shift?
I think materials, and you got, you know, that was brought up earlier with HP's material library out there. They've got, you know, your manufacturing materials unlocked between the PA12, PA11. Those are highly manufactured materials. And then on the flip side, with the 2500, we've got 12 different materials we can put in that. Everything from clear to opaque, from, you know, snap fit flexible to completely rigid and really tough. Some of my favorite materials there. And so, you know, really, I think the biggest jump is going to be just the material selection.
Yeah.
And the ability for either the system you have or a system out there that can easily go between materials, you know, from that variety of materials.
Yeah.
And, you know, we see that with HPs. There's process to change that material. We see that with the 3D system. There's a process to change materials in there. You know, FDM, open source, we can print whatever we want. If somebody makes it, we can print it out there with that open source FDM, but then you've got to have that ability to figure out how to print with that.
Yeah.
And that's where the disadvantage there is. You know, so that ready to go material library, I think, is where we're going to see the biggest jump, is that ability to have a system that I can print more or less whatever I want. Yeah.
But we just did a survey not too long ago, and that was the number one inhibitor, right? Cost and material options. So yeah, no question.
That's why it's tough talking to injection molders, because they're used to having thousands of choices of plastics, and they're like, "Well, how many do you have?" I'm like, "I can offer you three or four. How's that?" But yeah, that no, materials is spot on. That's a good point.
Well, I think we're running out of time here, and so we appreciate Kevin Marchand joining us. We are at about 45 minutes, so. What if I told the group I did not press record? Would you be mad at me?
It says recording at the top.
Oh, all right. I was kidding.
Yeah, I'd be pissed at
you. I recorded it. You got me. But seriously, thank you, Kevin Marchand. Thank you, Lynn Milrith, for speaking up. And thanks for Mark joining us. But we appreciate it. Great insights, Kevin. We appreciate it.
Thank you.
This was a good time.
Thanks. Okay.
All right, bye.